It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I push the button.
Well done.
I know, it took some skills.
You've got button pushing skills.
I've actually been cheating on you. I used the sound equipment without you.
Okay.
To make some sound effects for one of our listeners who wanted to incorporate them into a presentation that she has at work.
Oh.
Apparently, I've developed something of a reputation at work for making sound effects.
Yeah, what kind of sound effects?
I just like to make sound effects in general. Yeah. I think the flagship of it is whenever somebody is watching me do something on the computer, I have to make sound. So I'm like... like moving every time I click and move the mouse.
Makes
sense. But in general, I just make weird noises. People in the hall say, "How you doing?" And I say, stuff like that.
That sounds rude.
Yeah. Oh, I'm nothing if not rude. Anyway.
Hello. And welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that is right now, as of this date, officially endorsing Donald Trump as the Republican Party candidate for president. Not because we want him to be president, but just because I totally want to see that general election. I think it would be hilarious.
That'd be something.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 223.
223. Goodness gracious.
Yep.
I still can't even believe he's officially running.
Well,
I thought he would never do that. I thought he would always maybe consider running over and over and over again. And that was the thing. I was like, this seems risky. Like, he can't think he's going to win. Why would he take that risk? And then I remembered most of his career is taking huge risks and frequently failing. So
that's true.
Now I'm less surprised.
There's also the attention angle. I mean,
yeah, but he's been getting, he gets plenty of attention already. So,
but he'll get more
in theory. In theory,
especially if he actually attends a debate,
that's
which he won't. He'll drop out
that
before
be
then,
hilarious.
Probably. I mean, hasn't this happened before? Hasn't he declared before?
No,
and then
no, no.
Even
he's,
before
he's,
the Iowa caucuses,
he
wasn't...
said he was thinking about it before, but he's never actually done it, that I recall, at least.
I don't know.
I want to see who he's going to blame it on when he drops out. Because he'll blame somebody. There'll be somebody at fault for why he's dropping
probably,
out.
Probably. That's probably true.
For those of you just joining us, we don't normally talk politics. I just think that man is funny. And horrible, but also funny.
unintentionally funny. Not funny like
comedian funny. No.
Like, he doesn't... You're laughing at him, and he's probably...
I'm laughing at him, not
at him,
with him.
Not with him, that's
yeah,
right.
Yes. At
right.
him. With the world. Anyway, we have a hat. It's magic. In that it has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. And people, like yourselves, maybe even you, literally, write into that email address, TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com, with little notes, little comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Election-following servants, electoral servants.
I guess, sure.
Election-ish-esque dudes. Draw the note cards randomly out of the hat, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, and that's the show.
You guys write the hat, we show up, pull stuff out of the hat, and the hat does all the stuff in between.
Yes.
That's what makes it magic.
And we haven't seen each other in a couple weeks, because things. And so you guys already knew that if you were listening, because
We had to record two in a row before. We're going to have to do that pretty soon again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad you... I told her, I was like, good news. And she's like, what? I'm like, we're going to have a double podcast on this date. And she's like, why is that good news? I'm like, because William can't make the July 2nd, which I now realize I totally would not have been able to make either. So this works out well.
I see.
William was more on the ball for it. At first, I was like, hey, this means we can leave early to go visit. And I'm like, no, this means we can leave exactly when we would have left. So,
I see.
Yeah. So how has your 2 weeks been?
Let me think. Let's see. Oh, my brother was in town, the one that lives in Alaska.
I've got
three brothers. And
played by Joel Silver.
Everyone lives like in the Des Moines area, except for me living here and one of my brothers who lives in Alaska.
That one asshole.
He was back with his wife and kids and stuff. But I mean, I didn't even get over there really until, we recorded two because I thought I'd be going over Thursday, and I didn't actually. I didn't go till the next morning. So he was there all week, and I barely got to see him and his family, which was kind of sad. But you know, I went over there and it was nice. Let's see, seems like something.
Did anybody give anybody noogies?
No, seems like something.
I've been led to believe that Midwestern larger families do a lot of noogies. TV and movies have taught me this.
Okay, you and I have talked about this before, how families tend, when they get together, to sort of, everybody reverts back to...
Yes, yes.
It doesn't happen in my family for some reason. At least not as far as I can observe.
My hunch is that your family hasn't changed, and so you can't tell the difference.
Well, also, I mean, we see each other fairly frequently compared to a lot of other... I don't know. Anyway, let me think. Seems like there was something else that happened in the meantime, but I don't remember now what it was. I've kind of noticed over the last couple of weeks is I was talking about how, you know, I've in the last 10 years or so, I sort of picked up watching movies I hadn't seen for like a 15-year period there where I wasn't watching anything.
Mm-hmm.
And now my Netflix queue is almost empty. It doesn't seem like I like most modern movies. Although I am thankful for the rise in independent filmmaking that's happened in the last, you know, 15 or 20 years. Yeah. That gives me something to watch that's movies. But I am watching, in the last nine...
You should also check out the documentaries more. Netflix has got...
No, that's right.
Crazy number of documentaries.
I watch a lot of documentaries now. Which is closer to what I used to watch when I was younger. But I am watching a lot of, I am watching a lot of television since around 2006. There's a lot of TV shows I watch.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people claim, like, movies have gone to shit and TV has become really good.
Well, but, you know, as I've often said on the podcast, TV is kind of my preferred media, you know, even for documentaries. It's you know, I like television and I like TV shows, even fictional ones. I mean, you know, I don't, everybody knows I don't enjoy fiction that much, but if I do, I like it in the TV form and like a series, you know, when it was serialized in, you know, short episodes or whatever. I like it like that. And usually there's, the thing about television is that it really lends itself to the kinds of, well, first of all, it lends itself to story arcs, period, you know, and certain character development. But also the kinds of arcs that I like, and you know, speculative.
And with a broader, more episodic formula, you can tell more different stories. It's really hard to tell a new story in a movie these days.
Yeah.
Because you're still dealing with a very small time.
Or frame. A story with a whole lot of depth.
Yeah.
And of course, what cinema allows you to do sometimes is you know, dispense with all that arc stuff and just do something that's sort of interesting visually or that's doesn't follow the a typical narrative structure or mm-hmm. whatever, and mm-hmm. that's fine sometimes. That's good sometimes, but you know, obviously, when it comes to storytelling, I like something that's got some structure. It's got an arc. It's got, you know, people learn something at the end or whatever. I mean, that's a very typical thing in TV that I like. That's the kind of fiction I like. Is the
Oh, gee, Dad, I guess I learned that when I was cheating, I was really only cheating myself. and my education.
But I mean, I even like in South Park when they make fun of that whole thing about, well, this is something. What we learned. I even like that. I mean, that to me, that's really cool.
And the greatest version of that ever was the episode that involved the North American Man-Boy Love Association, because the spokesperson for that kept trying to have one of those speeches, and every time he would finish his line and the music would stop, Kyle would be like, dude, you have sex with children. And he's like, yes, but we've learned, and the music would start up again. Dude, no!
Doesn't work. Well, you know, it also, it probably relates to the fact that another thing is that when I was young, what I liked variety entertainment. You know, I liked variety shows, and I think I would have really enjoyed, you know, if there was still something like vaudeville when I was growing up, where you went to a theater and you saw acts or whatever. I think I would have really liked that. But an evening of television, if you're watching it straight, you know, or going from channel to channel, you might watch the news, you might watch a documentary, you might watch a sitcom, which just is like an extended sketch, you know. So you get that feeling from TV too. So
I still miss the Trio channel that had in the mornings old reruns of Ronan Martin's Laughing.
Oh yeah,
that was
amazing
to watch.
But all of that said, I do like binge watching a show. I mean, this whole thing where Netflix puts a whole season on, you can just watch it. I like that too. For some reason, I can't.
So does
really
any of this lead to how your 2 weeks were?
Well, because
at this point they're just sort of
We watched Orange Is the New Black.
Oh yeah.
And which I thought the third season was better than the second season.
You weren't super happy with the second season, so that's good.
It was kind of blah.
We still haven't watched it.
Well,
at all, but we should
now. But someone, a friend of mine, posted on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook anymore, but the other adult in the house is, and told me that this person said that it jumped the shark, and I wasn't sure. There are some issues with this season that I can imagine if you're, you know, that might bother some people more than others. Obviously, it didn't bother us that much, but I could see it bothering other people more. But to the degree of saying that shows jumped the shark, I'm not quite sure about that.
People just like to use that for, and it has become shorthand for, I'm not into it anymore.
Yeah.
Which is a very different thing, but people like to say it that way.
So we watched that. Let's see, what else? We're still watching Penny Dreadful, and we kind of like this season okay.
And it's getting a third season.
Is it?
Yeah.
Good. And what else? And we've been watching lots of documentaries that I don't even talk about, but they're really cool. Let's see. It seems like there's some other thing we're watching recently. Oh, we started watching Defiance again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, which I'm recording again. I'm like, damn, I really should watch that second season that's sitting there since the third season is starting.
The thing about that show, and I know I've probably said this before, is it's not great, but the concept is so good.
Yeah.
And the setting is so good.
It's hitting a certain niche in its premise and its setting.
I mean, it's not bad or anything. There's nothing.
Got some good actors in
it. Yeah, the performances are good. The plots aren't horrible, like with big plot holes type of horror. I mean, sometimes that kind of thing happens, but that's not a particular problem with it. It's just the stories aren't that compelling.
It's Sci-Fi Channel TV.
Yeah.
But yeah, the premise and the setting are just very cool.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd enjoy the game or not, but
is the game still going?
I think so.
I thought it tanked real bad.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that. I've never heard of a person who actually plays it. Whereas most every other MMO of significance, I know somebody.
But I, you know, we almost didn't watch it because, like I said, it's not the greatest written or whatever. But then you're watching it and all the stuff, the backstory stuff, all the background,
which they really did well,
is so cool. You just kind of want to stay plugged in to see if, you know, when they do something cool again, kind of hold on and wait for something cool to happen.
And that's the thing. I'm having no impetus to watch again, but I remember the end of the first season and being really like, is it going to get a second? And when it did, I was really excited. So I'm like, probably if I get back into it, I'll really get back into it. So we'll have to see.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll binge it every
weekend. So far it's just, it's just had a 2-hour premiere, I think.
Yeah, but I've still got the entire second
season.
I haven't
is this the third season?
This is the third.
Oh, okay.
I haven't watched any of the second season. It's all on my DVR.
Wow. See, that's kind of what I mean. To me, the first and second seasons are just totally blended together, you know, they don't, there's nothing really extraordinary about either one. I mean, there's, I think there's a single arc in the two seasons with certain alien stuff going on. Yeah. But yeah, it wasn't that
compelling. Spoiler alert, there's alien stuff going on in Defiance.
Let's see. Also, we're watching Orphan Black. And, you know, that's okay. I've noticed are you watched that show?
No. The initial premise super didn't appeal to me, and so I didn't touch it. And now, since I've heard that it's worth it for her performance, but I'm like, it's on my list, you know, at some point.
Same thing with me. The first thing I heard, you know, all the premise I heard about it, that doesn't really interest me. I don't know how we started watching it, except that female lead, you know, yep. And you don't get that very much. So
a female cast in one lead.
Yeah. And then when we first watched it, you know, and her performance was not, I mean, it was good, but it wasn't like blow you away good, you know. But now it is. I don't know if she got better or if the writing got better.
Sometimes it takes a while for everybody to find their footing.
But now it's phenomenal what she's doing.
People seem to really like it.
Maybe it was me. Maybe I was being too. No, I mean, I think it's just better. I mean,
mm-hmm. It can happen. Look at Fringe after the first half of the first season. That mm-hmm. show came back from hiatus, a completely different show and a good show.
Well, as I'm thinking about it
later became a shitty show.
As I'm thinking about it,
that was much years later.
As I'm thinking about it just now, though, I think my problem with the first season was it wasn't really her, so much her performance as it was how the characters were drawn. Actually, I thought they were drawn fairly stereotypically, but that often happens when I first start. Well, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was the same way. In the first few episodes, there were a lot of characters that were so two-dimensional and so, yeah, I've seen this 1,000 times before.
Yeah, I'm going to call you on that one. That did not get better.
Well,
if anything, it got kind of worse.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, that's something else that happens in TV shows. As the TV show goes on and they actually give these characters an arc, they can get more interesting and less two-dimensional.
And they
get farther and farther away from that stereotype that they started at.
Yes.
And I think that's kind of what happened here was she was doing a perfectly good job with these characters, but she wasn't being given much to work with.
And it was a novelty at that point. Because, okay, spoiler alert if you literally have no concept of Orphan Black, but the whole premise involves clones. And so a lot of the characters are clones played by the same actor.
And this is revealed early on, so yes, this isn't a big spoiler.
Within minutes, I think. And also just the lead-up to when the show was
made. Yeah, they told everybody.
It's about clones.
Yeah, they told everybody that.
And so I'm guessing at the beginning it was a big novelty. Look, she's playing these drastically different people, and you would define them as, like, a thing.
Yeah.
And so, but now that you've got the characters for a while, now you can give them some depth.
And it's amazing now. I mean, now you watch and it's literally like you see a different person, you know, and that wasn't true at first.
Yeah.
And not just because it, like, you're just watching, seeing it for the first time. It was something about the performance wasn't quite right, but I don't think it was her. I think it was the writing. And now the characters have been developed more and the writing's a lot better. It seems to me. I don't know how that happened, but yeah, her performance is really amazing. It is worth watching just for that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The rest of it's, but she's pretty awesome, so. What else are we watching? I don't know. I'm taking too much time away from you.
Totally.
You probably have a lot to say.
Like 20 minutes.
You probably have a lot to say about 2 weeks.
Mark was talking about this on the blog, but from a while ago, so I'm not sure. Have I talked to you since I've seen Mad Max?
No.
I talked to you about how I was going to, but I hadn't actually seen Mad Max Fury Road.
I don't think you told me
yet. Well,
I
think we saw it the night after we last recorded.
Okay, well.
Seen Mad Max Fury Road.
Mm-hmm.
Recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty strongly for what it is. It's a crazy, fairly violent action movie. It's 2 hours long. It's essentially a two-hour action scene. Like, maybe 10 minutes of the film is not.
Well, that's
people like I'm kind of amazed at how much action they packed.
That's pretty much what the previews promised what it was going to be.
It's insane. I mean, cuz I've seen all the other Mad Max movies and like they have way more just dialogue and hanging out.
Some downtime, yeah.
Yeah, this is insane. But it's good, so, and it's almost entirely practical effects, which is very cool. It also gets a lot of shit right with regard to gender and its treatment of female characters that no other action movie has ever pulled off. It does really well with that kind of stuff. The movie is not about Mad Max. It's about a different character played by Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
For some reason, I mix her up and ScarJo sometimes, but yeah, Charlize Theron. And it's got some really cool stuff in it. And here's the thing, and I want to say this because I have talked about this issue at length on this podcast with regard to books and movies and stuff like that. This movie, it's, for those of you not familiar with Mad Max, post-apocalyptic, it's desert, it's, you know, it's Australia, but after the apocalypse, so it's like Australia now, but a little bit scarier. And so it's after the apocalypse, so generally you got these weird communities that are built on, like, strange cults, or people who have the physical means to just basically force everyone into essentially slavery, and so that means horrible. The villains are always really terrible people who use the apocalypse as an advantage to just make themselves tyrants. And we've got that again here. And we've got people who we know via the story and other things, and just sort of obviously terrible people, men mostly, in fact, actually entirely, men who have a forced harem that they breed against the will of these women, and all the usual terrible things that men do to women, and that's how you know they're bad guys and all that stuff. However, none of it happens during this movie. You don't see a single person, you don't see a single woman getting abused or tortured. You don't see a woman getting raped or attempted raped or even talking about it happening in the past. It's very clear this guy is like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that element that some people consider an important story element because it's legitimate to the genre or whatever is there, but we don't have to see any of it. I'm like, holy shit, this is what I've been talking about.
That's
like,
interesting.
If you really want a guy who's so shitty that he would be a rapist in your story, I'm okay with that as a concept. You totally don't need to have me watch him rape somebody.
That's right.
This does it. And it's not, and none of this like, oh, he would have, but somebody came in the room. No, it's just not there. It's not part of what happened here. But I totally get it. I mean, it didn't make me think the guy wasn't horrible. Like, he's clearly terrible, terrible guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm just like, why couldn't the other ones do
this? I don't know.
And also, there's an old lady in it that some of you geeks will look at her and say, I know that face, and I don't know where from. And I had this problem, too, and it wasn't until a few days later somebody told me, it's Granny from Farscape. Crazy old lady. It was on Farscape for a season or two.
I don't remember her.
Yeah, I don't remember what her real name is, but Crichton always called her Granny. So, yeah, if you're interested in that kind of movie, this is a great one for it. I've known a lot of people who've already gone to see it twice. It's pretty awesome. Seen two other movies. I'll try and talk quickly about them. Saw The Haunt at 2 a.m. on Saturday on Netflix. It's a horror movie. It's bad. Real bad. It's a very generic haunted house thing and shitty. So you can skip it. Also full of goddamn jump scares. Just cause. Which I'm like, fuck right off right there. But also terrible story, mediocre acting. Skip it. I love shitty horror movies and I'm like, skip it. And I'm not saying like you can watch it and it's not gonna like mess up your life, but it's just so not worth your time.
Sure.
So skip it. The Haunt, fuck that. And then last night we saw Focus.
Okay.
You're familiar?
Who's in that again?
Will Smith and a blonde woman who really looks like a young Jamie Presley.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a con man movie.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a con movie. We love con movies and heist movies and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's why we loved Leverage so much. We love con stuff. This one's not that good.
Yeah, that's one of those genres I thought I liked, and then realized I didn't like it so much.
Yeah.
So I haven't even been interested in this movie.
We really love. Well, and I wasn't either because it looked style over style. Like, it didn't look like a con movie. It looked like that's the excuse we have for all this stuff. And that's kind of what it was.
Oh.
Early in the movie, when we're sort of establishing there is some really good con stuff going on. But it quickly becomes sort of a different kind of movie. The con doesn't make a lot of... There's a lot of unanswered questions that I actually don't care about. The sympathy is ridiculous. Near the end, we get a long speech from somebody about how Will Smith's character is a good guy, and that's his big weakness as a con man and all this stuff. And I'm like, literally nothing he has done ever in this movie or that we've heard about him doing before this movie labels him as a good guy. There's nothing good about him. There are a couple of things that he did that were nice for people for specific selfish reasons of his own that just worked out well for other people, but there's nothing about him that says good guy. So fuck that. So yeah, it's dumb. I mean, the people in it are pretty. So, and actually, whoever was filming it was taking it way seriously. It is very carefully and deliberately filmed. I'm not sure it's worth it. There were a lot of scenes that just sort of held longer than they needed to. But somebody really worked at a lot of the filming stuff in it. There's one thing that actually really disconcerted Trish, but I actually thought was really cool. You're in a shot, and it's nighttime in a hotel room, and you turn off the action and go down this sort of side hall in the hotel room. And then you come around the other side, and during that process, it becomes morning. But the windows and natural light are so limited where it is that you almost, like, you have to really pay attention. And so it can be very jarring. You come around the corner, and suddenly it's daytime again. But it was kind of a cool effect. I mean, I've seen variants done on it, but this one was just very smooth. I kind of liked it. So, yeah, so that's the movie situation. TV shows. Stitchers. On ABC Family. You hear about it?
Yeah.
You see it?
No, I'm not
that Don't bother. It's shitty.
Yeah, I'm not that interested.
It's super shitty. The premise is so shoehorned in that we have to come up with some really, really dumb stuff to make it work. We invented a psychological condition that doesn't exist, that's really dumb, pretended it was important, and then tacked a bunch of shit onto it that doesn't even make any sense. And it's, yeah, no, it's just, it's awful. I can't even go into all the reasons why. It's terrible. Don't watch it. We saw two episodes because we were like, we really need something to watch. Because right now it's like, do you want to watch At Midnight or The Soup? If you don't want to watch either of those, you're fucked. Go read a book. So we were like, well, it's tolerable. Maybe, you know, something until the next thing starts up again. But by the second episode, we were like, no. But at some point in this, we saw a commercial for a new TV show that's currently on Netflix, like a Netflix original show. And in the process of going to look for it, I saw there's like three or four others that have recently showed up. That are they're just sneaking them in now.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm very curious about the rest of those, but I want to go to the one that we saw the commercial for. Sense8.
Yeah, we're going to watch that.
Yes, you are.
Sometime.
Watch it.
Okay.
It is good.
Oh, okay.
It is, well...
It's on our list.
Yeah, no, seriously watch it. I think you guys in particular really like it. I want to talk to you people about Sense8 a little bit. I'm going to recommend it in general, but it's, again, one of these, you know, you need to know what you're getting into. And if you're like, that doesn't sound like my thing at all, then skip it. But here's the big one. It is created, written, executive produced, and to a degree directed by three individuals that most of you will know. J. Michael Straczynski, who is famous for having done Babylon 5 and also apparently being a really bad writer of comic books, but I only know him from Babylon 5, and the Wachowskis. They put this shit together. It's their baby. And their stank is all over it. So all the great things and all the terrible things of both JMS and the Wachowskis is here in spades. But so far, and I'll also say we're halfway through the season, and so far it's incredibly slow. It is like a sci-fi.
Well, I don't mind slow myself.
But so far, it's largely characters.
Okay.
And what it appears to be, and I can say this because really they haven't really explained it too well, but based on like the initial commercial and other stuff, some weird shit goes down, and eight people in the world now have the ability to basically share their senses.
Yeah.
But nobody's told them, and they don't realize it. And so these episodes are largely, A, looking into their lives, and B, sort of starting to have flashes of this kind of thing and them not knowing what's going on.
Right.
But that's mostly what I was bringing up. But the eight people are so diverse and so non-normative in a lot of ways because of the Wachowskis, and that they can't, they, everything has to be non-normative for them.
Sure.
So it's really fun. It's not super realistic, but it's like, these people live, these are the kind of people that I want to like, this is more like people I hang out with. And so it's a fascinating bunch of characters, and their lives are really kind of interesting. And I've been told, because I was worried, I was like, so things are going to start moving right at the end of the damn season. But I've been told by somebody else who's watched the whole thing, no, second half, not slow anymore, and awesome. So I'm very excited for that. But yes, I highly recommend it. It's got some really interesting stuff involving sexual orientation and gender identity. A lot of stuff about that.
Sure.
It's very cool. It is very R-rated, I guess. There are F-bombs all over the place. A fair bit of nudity, including male full frontal. So just be prepared for all of that. But they're all very pretty looking people, so go for it. And for those of you of this camp, the actress who I refuse to say because I always mispronounce her first name, her last name is Freeman, who played Martha Jones in Doctor Who, is in this. And we get introduced to her naked, having sex with another woman using a strap-on. So if that's something you ever thought you might want to see in your life, watch this TV show.
Okay.
That's not the only thing. She's in that. She has a cool character, and it's fun, too. But, I mean, I'm a pervert. I can't pass up. And I know there are others of you out there. So it's like people who are like, by the way, Orange is the New Black has Donna from That 70s Show topless. They're like, okay. Like, to certain demographics, that needs to be mentioned.
It needs to be mentioned.
Trust me.
Okay.
There was a Penny Arcade about that one, actually, to which one of the guys said, why isn't that the title of the show? Because he was like, I'm not interested in that they said that. He's like, oh my God! Yes, certain people. But anyway, good show. The one real downside, I will say, one of the eight people is a gentleman who played a lieutenant in Stargate Universe, who I believe his name was Matt, and he was a mediocre actor, and it was a pretty shitty character, and he's here again. So I'm like, oh, God. But, you know, it survives him. I'm just not very impressed by him. But there's some other really impressive actors that I've never seen before, but, like, I'm going to want to look these people up after this show.
Okay.
Because they did some cool shit. And Daryl Hannah, for some reason. Yeah, I was watching it and I was like, is that actually the first thing I said was, is that Kim Basinger? And then the credits happened. I'm like, oh no, it's Daryl Hannah. I'm like, but wait, it's Daryl Hannah? What the hell is she doing here?
Have you ever heard of the book series? I guess there's three volumes.
Never.
Oh gosh, what's it called? Something Strange in Mr. Norrell? Or...
Yes, I have heard of it.
And now there's like a TV.
There's a, it's a miniseries.
Miniseries, seven episodes or something.
Which I'm currently recording. I'm very curious about that.
Yeah, too. We've watched about half of it, and it's...
Is it good?
Really good. Really good.
It looked interesting, so I grabbed it off of there. I'm going to check out something I just heard about. Actually, I need to set the DVR tonight because it starts tomorrow. A show on Sci-Fi called Killjoys that's apparently about intergalactic bounty hunters. It looks like it'll be mediocre, but I'm like, this is a show about intergalactic bounty hunters. I should at least check it out, you know?
I should at least check it out.
I'm like, there are certain premises that you're like, you gotta see.
For you, maybe. You can tell me if it's any good.
It's like a pizza situation. Like, it could be, you know? I gotta give it a shot, so we'll see.
Okay.
Anything that has the potential to be good space opera, you know?
I suppose.
No, don't get me wrong. I would say there's a better than even chance I'm going to watch one to two episodes and be like, yeah, no. But we'll see. Tomorrow night, I'm going to be seeing a stage production of 101 Dalmatians in which my niece will be playing Cruella de Vil.
Boy.
I'm very excited about
that. That's going to be amazing.
Yes, I'm very excited about that. Because I know she can do it really well. She's quite the little actress, and she's coming into her own. She's had a couple of leads now, stuff like this. But this one's a big one.
This is huge.
This is
yeah,
be awesome.
I mean, this, as you like to say, chewing the scenery.
Yes, and she loves to do that. So I think this will be. I think this will be really good. So I'm actually really excited. We had to do the thing. We're working extra hours throughout the week so we can leave early tomorrow.
Where does that expression come from? Did some actor actually, as they were playing an insane person, chew on the scenery?
That's
what we call it when
but
someone's
I
playing
love
a
the
crazy
idiom.
Person.
I especially love the idiom because I use it, well, I don't want to say, I use it where appropriate, and I talk about actors a fair bit, so it comes up.
Oh, yeah.
But every time I visualize it, every time. But it's always like a high school set or whatever. It's always like cardboard displays that they just grab and they're like chewing on it. Like, I don't know why.
I'm very curious as to where it came from. I mean, I heard it around. I think when you first said it on the podcast, I remember thinking, I've heard that before, but it's been a long time since I heard it. And I know what it means because of the context. But where did that come from?
When I was younger, I thought it was just sort of indicative of like putting a lot into your acting. And then I sort of realized over time that it... And of course, my variant, like I talked about before, is acting really hard. Which is a similar thing. But in general, you need to have a certain level of talent to chew the scenery, I think. And anybody can act really hard,
even if
they suck at it.
Yeah, yeah.
So like Idris Elba in Pacific Rim chewed the scenery a bit.
Yeah.
The entire cast of Crawl acted really hard. They acted the shit out of that movie. They were just like, I feel like some of them bled from the ears. They were acting so hard. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's it. I feel like, oh, I have gaming news.
Okay.
We're finally making characters for the Earthdawn game. And we are, our little group is consisting of a dwarven archer, a troll warrior, a human scout, and an obsidian illusionist. And obsidian are these big rock people. And actually probably a troll wizard that I'm going to play, because I like to give him an extra character so I can sort of keep my hand in the mix for the party. I can point them in the right direction, fill any holes in the party, that kind of stuff. So we're building that. I'm getting really kind of excited about it.
Are you watching Will Wheaton's RPG show?
No, I am not.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. I'll catch it at some point.
It's pretty good. I like it.
I have, however, since I last talked to you, watched Baby Goats in Pajamas probably 7 more times.
I've watched it 0 times.
Oh, it's so good.
Actually, I haven't even thought about it.
It's so
at
good.
All.
Oh, I love it.
I forgot it even existed
Baby
about 2
Goats
minutes after I left
in
here.
Pajamas.
And when you first mentioned it a second ago, I had to remind myself what that even was.
You know why? Because you're dead inside. Shall we add it up?
I think we should. I brought my special glasses in for it and everything.
Your special glasses.
Yep.
Oh, also a little sad news. And I know we keep having different levels of this, but Constantine is super for real dead now. Like, the showrunners have stopped trying to sell it to other networks. It's just done. So, that's sad, because that show was really good.
Well, I hope you have an answer to this, because I sure don't. What's your favorite limerick?
I am really not a fan of limericks in general.
I don't know any. I mean, I know what a limerick is, obviously. I've heard several of them, none of which I remember. I'm not a particular fan of, I mean, I know a lot of people love them.
I really...
But I don't hate them. I don't see what the big deal is about a limerick. What makes it so great.
As a rule, I'm not a super big fan of comedic poetry.
Really?
Yeah, this is like a thing.
Because,
I mean, it's a genre.
I guess.
Even, you know, Shel Silverstein's got... There's some guy who's really famous.
I like the poetry in Calvin and Hobbes. That's pretty funny.
I don't remember any poetry.
A couple times in the book collections, and maybe, now that I think about it, it might be that you only see it in the book, because where else would he have it? But there's an a nice long poem about something or other. And they're really good. I'm thinking also of Jimmy Stewart would sometimes read his poetry on Johnny Carson. Oh, nice. And those were pretty funny sometimes. So, I mean, I think I do enjoy a funny poem sometimes, but limericks don't strike me as ever being that funny, and usually they're dirty, so that never impresses me.
I'm not going to say, like, that no poem is ever, like, just in general, as a genre, I don't appreciate it. And limericks are one of those that have a very specific and relatively short rhyme and meter scheme. And I don't give a fuck about those.
Well, I think what's supposed to make a limerick funny is it's supposed to be surprising. And, you know, the you're not really supposed to see the end coming.
Yeah.
Except that for the dirty ones, I think you do anticipate a little bit what's going to be said just based on what they're going to rhyme with.
Yeah.
And I think that makes a lot of people laugh. But, I'm not much for blue humor. And then the limericks that aren't that are just sort of, you know, okay, yeah, that's cute or whatever.
There have been occasions where someone has essentially been forced to come up with one on the spur of the moment. And if they do so successfully, I have found that interesting.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, if they bomb so horribly, sometimes that's also hilarious. It's never... Just in general, the whole... I hate to say this because, you know, the Eastern ways are the smarter ways, and we all, as white people, should learn from ancient Eastern philosophies. But I'm not that into haiku either.
No, me neither.
Like, any of these, I feel like it distracts, because I'm way into poetry.
Yeah.
But I feel like too much of it gets subsumed by this whole, I got to make it rhyme, I got to make it fit this, or whatever. And people are just really proud if they pulled that shit off. And I'm like... No, give me a piece of free-form prose, like, any day over that.
Yeah, I hear you.
So
you don't have a favorite limerick
either? I would say no.
I don't either.
For many, many years, I didn't know the second line to the Nantucket one. Like, that was always the joke. There once was a man from Nantucket. And that would show up everywhere, and that was always the joke, because then you're like, oh, no, we can't tell that one or whatever. For years, I'm like, I don't even know. I know it's dirty.
I still don't know.
It's general. I think it varies, but it's whose something was so big he could fuck it, I think is the rhyme. And then I don't know where it goes from there either. But yeah, for years, I was just like, I know there's something. And, you know,
yeah,
when I was young enough, like, that was intriguing to me, but we didn't have the internet,
but yeah, so. People always did say that, like, oh, they're about to say something really
soon
dirty.
As somebody says from Nantucket, you're like, oh no, we can't say that. That's like the joke. Very few times do you actually hear the whole thing, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, very often limericks remind me of, like, Western European body songs out of, like, the Middle Ages and stuff like that. I'm never that into those either. Mm. Oh, the farmer's daughter showed up and wow, did they have sex? Ha ha. And I'm like, okay, one of two things. Either turn it into a proper porn story so I can appreciate it, or keep it to yourself. Either way. But don't sing and joke. I don't know. That, no. I don't need that.
Well, you and I are in agreement on that one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. William prefers things to be in porn form.
No, I don't really.
So, no. None of us do. And lucky for you, you're anonymous, so...
You know, I shouldn't even say stuff like that, because people who don't know me will probably think I'm judgy about it when I'm not. I mean, I don't care what anyone else likes or thinks.
Is super judgy.
No, I am not.
At the end of every episode, he goes through a list that he's writing as we speak
of
all the things I did wrong and said wrong.
No, there are certain things I don't like, and I say so. That doesn't mean I think other people have to agree with me or that I care what they do. Do we have time for another one?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, that wasn't a very good one for us, because we didn't have anything to say to it. I feel sorry for the person who posed that question. They probably thought they were going to get a nice, long, cool conversation out of it.
I'm pretty sure William's going to have an answer to this one.
Okay.
This is from Beth.
Beth, okay.
Dear, sweet... Beth. Where is the best place to go on vacation?
Why do you think I'm going to have an answer to that? I hardly ever go on vacation.
I know, but you have very specific places that you think are the most awesome things in the world.
I do?
Yes.
Huh.
Off the top of Nobody my head, told you're going to tell people they have to go to hell or to Cedar Point.
Those are two cool places.
Or Melcher, Dallas. You want people to vacation in Melcher, Dallas. I don't know.
There's not, I mean, you know, there's not a lot to see in Melcher, Dallas. The best place to go on vacation is...
I should probably put this in here when she was still not married yet and was thinking about a honeymoon.
You know...
which was like a year ago.
There's a couple ways to answer a question like this. You can name a place.
That's true.
Or you could name the criteria that you might apply, the questions you might ask yourself to determine for yourself what the best place is going to be.
That is also true.
Now, for me... I like to go places with some historical significance, whether or not it's, you know, my genealogy, my family history, historically significant that way, or like history book significant.
You like to learn shit on your vacation.
Yeah, I really do. I really do. And so that's the way I think about vacation. And of course, that means that there's lots of places that would be cool to go to, and there's not just one.
Dollywood?
No, probably not. That's why I'm not the kind of person to go to like a resort, say, because you go to a resort because you want to...
You don't learn much at a resort.
Yeah, you want to do nothing, and you want people to wait on you and stuff. Yeah. That doesn't sound like vacation to me. Vacation to me sounds like I'm going to go experience something that I've never experienced before that's going to, you know, enrich my life somehow.
Yeah.
And so... Yeah, I want to go. I want to go somewhere to learn something. And so there's no one perfect place. It's
well, especially because you can't keep going back because you'll learn it all and then you.
But do you have a best place that?
It is very interesting for me because I grew up in a. We traveled a lot. That was the main.
See, we hardly ever traveled when I was growing up. So
that was the main financial expenditure that we had. Like we didn't have a lot of nice stuff. We had really old cars and stuff like that, but we would go on trips. And I mean, when I was five, I went through Europe.
Yeah.
Did a lot of traveling at a fairly young age. And my family raised me to a similar type of travel as you're talking about. You go to experience the culture. To learn.
Yeah.
Through the back door was a popular phrasing that somebody who wrote travel books did. You know, you don't go to the touristy stuff. You go to see the real whatever it is. Rick Steves, who had his Travels in Europe show, that he's still fucking doing. Holy shit.
Wow,
isn't he dead now? I saw him live one day. He came to our library and gave a talk, and my dad and I went because we were big Rick Steves fans. I'm not even lying. That's how nerdy my family is. We were big Rick Steves fans. Very excited to meet him. But his form of traveling, like, very much, you know, get a sense of the local flavor and all that kind of stuff. And this is how I was raised. That's not so much how I do it anymore.
Yeah.
I've been introduced to a couple of new sort of experiences. To the degree, actually, when I was younger, when I was probably, like, 12, my grandparents took us all for their 50th anniversary to this incredible resort in Hawaii. It was a resort that was like on, literally on the show Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. It's like one of the top 10 in the world kind of thing. And at the time, you know, I was like 12. It was awesome. Whatever. But I always look back and I'm like, yeah, that was sort of dull and boring. Like, no, that's not a real, it's not the kind of vacation I normally want to do. Since then, I have learned that is not true. That's totally the kind of vacation. Cruises.
Are the
good example of that. And I want to experience just enough local culture to eat their food, you know? And that's mostly it. And the other one I discovered through the producer's family is a sort of a family vacation of a type I never experienced before, because my family had family vacations. But again, we would go exploring, learn about the place, the culture, da-da-da-da-da-da. When we go to Virginia, in the summer, as we do every year, we all go to this house and we stay there and we just hang out. And sometimes we go swimming. Sometimes we read books. Sometimes we play games. We just hang out as a family and just relax. Mm-hmm. And certainly not being paid, like nobody's waiting on us and stuff like that. But we're just there as a family, just chilling.
Right.
And that's really fun too. But we still appreciate the other version. It tends to be smaller scale. A fun thing Trish and I do is we basically find an interesting looking tiny town within about 2 or 3 hours of here, and we'll go there for a weekend and we'll explore it, and we'll explore it just as much as we want to. So if we're like, oh, I'm getting bored with it, then we'll go back and relax, watch movies or whatever. But, you know, we go check it out. And that's fun. And that's fun to see these little towns and see what's going on and sure. explore them. So I still enjoy that. But in general, yeah, of course, at this point, the short answer for this one is on a cruise ship for me. That's the best place to go on vacation because it's awesome. You should do it. I do believe, unless there's something that really puts it out of range, like it's ridiculously expensive or it's physically impossible or intimidating for me, or it's really dangerous or it's patently illegal. I do feel like maybe try every kind of vacation.
Sure.
Because, well, the cruise is a great example. Totally figured, like, I don't think I'm going to be into this. And now it's my favorite thing in the world. Which is why I'm still trying to convince the producer that we need to go one time to Vegas. I fully expect we're both going to be like, yeah, this is not our thing, but I want to try it. You know?
Yeah.
Ezzy wants to go on vacation with you. Apparently. She just headbutt your elbow, basically.
I don't know what she was doing there.
Bonk. I saw a really good video today of cats getting people's attention to get petted, and it was pretty cute.
Okay.
Coming up and like, excuse me, excuse me. Yeah, no, no, I'm talking to the wrong person because you're dead inside. So yeah, on a cruise ship is the best place. Or hell.
Hell, Michigan is an interesting place to visit. There's not a lot to do. Well, there's miniature golf there now, so.
We went to a little town in Wisconsin in March a couple years ago. And it was perfect. Like, I think we got a Groupon to like the local hotel or whatever. So we're there. But it was so bad because it was a seasonal sort of town. So there were like a bunch of like museums and stuff that all opened literally 3 days after we were leaving.
Oh no.
So there was nothing going on in this town. But like if we had come the next week, which is why the Groupon was there, because it was the epitome of the off season.
I've taken a lot of vacations where you're not just going to one place, you're going to several places on a long drive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I really like that, actually. When we went to hell, what our vacation was that time was, we're going to go to hell, Michigan, and then we're going to go to Paradise, Michigan.
I remember, yes.
And there's a lot of cool places to stop on the way. You go over this
Limbo,
long...
purgatory.
You go over this long toll bridge before you get to the Upper Peninsula where you get to Paradise. You know, there's a shipwreck museum up in the Upper Peninsula. There's a cranberry farm we visited. There's Mackinac Island, right before you go over the bridge to the Upper Peninsula. Mackinac Island's is a really interesting place to go. It's where they shot some movie with Christopher Reeves in it. What is it?
Somewhere in Time.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That hotel, that big hotel in that movie.
I can't believe I got that right.
Is in Mackinac Island.
It's like the only non-Superman Christopher Reeve movie I know.
So. We just had this whole thing planned of all the places we were going to go, and it was very casual. We were never in a hurry, and it was great. And then when we drove back, we went through Green Bay, and it was a beautiful drive back. I don't know. It was just a great casual vacation. We were pretty much always on the move, you know, stopping mm-hmm. here and there for an hour or two, and we stayed in a couple hotels. But it was perfect. It was just great. And apparently, there's like. Motorcycle clubs do the Hell to Paradise thing. We didn't mm-hmm. just make that up. So when we got
no, I wouldn't think so.
When we got to Paradise, they had T-shirts, you know, for this. So we bought.
Oh, I think I've seen.
Yeah,
we
bought a whole bunch of T-shirts Hell to Paradise. We thought we were being clever, but no. Some motorcycle.
I
clubs
feel like
did
other people
us.
Should go the other way.
maybe.
But that's more of a crime spree than a road trip, I guess. I've done a lot of driving, a lot of road trips, you know, as a kid.
Yeah, I guess the road trips, aren't they, when you do that?
They are.
But a road trip can be going one place and coming right back.
Yeah, or like my brother and I road trip when he moved back from Oregon to Minnesota. He and I drove it over the space of like a week, and we went through Yellowstone, and that was when I saw Wall Drug and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like them.
You don't like
road trips? Well, here's the thing. So I think I've talked about this before. As the years go on, I less and less and less and less and really less like air travel.
Yeah,
I fucking hate it. When I was a kid, loved it. Part of it is I'm older. Part of it is I'm fatter. And part of it is air travel has genuinely started to suck more. All of these are factors. I'm also discovering I don't like driving either.
Well, it's less of a thing. Fan of driving either,
and it's not like I prefer to walk. But just...
Well, ideally, if I was
spending a lot of time in cars, yeah. And sometimes it's fun. Trish and I have great conversations and stuff, but
ideally, I'd be on a train. I mean, you know,
train is nice.
Anywhere.
Ideally, I'd just have a teleporter. But.
Well, I like trains a lot, but you know, trains are pretty expensive, and they don't go all the places you want to go. So
and
you know, driving
not kept up for shit.
Driving is the kind of the next best thing, and I don't like driving either. I mean, I notoriously don't like driving, but driving on a particular vacation, you know, or whatever, seems to work out. One place I've been, it wasn't on vacation, it was a business thing, but I had a lot of time to do sightseeing and stuff, was New Orleans. I'd really like to go back there again because
I
want
to go to New Orleans. I
liked it a lot, and I'd like to go back. But
and I like po' boys and boobs, so I really feel like that's a good place for me.
Okay. I really feel like that's a good place for me.
Yeah. That's basically New Orleans, isn't it? Po' boys and boobs. I think it says that on the sign going in.
I don't know.
Welcome to New Orleans, po' boys and boobs.
There's a lot of great things in New Orleans. There's jazz. There's
I can think of three.
There's a lot of cult.
I love that you got that.
There's a lot of
love that you got that. I totally didn't think you were going
there's
to.
There's a lot of cultural.
I feel like
aspects.
You're learning. I feel like I'm having an impact on you over the years. I love that you got that.
Okay,
that's awesome. My head has been made.
Are we done?
Yeah, we can wrap it up. I'm satisfied.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're happy.
You're such a bright boy. If you'd like to talk about your three favorite things in New Orleans. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com. Also, talk about all the TV shows and movies that we talk about. And Donald Trump running for president, because that's funny.
Are you going to register Republican so you can caucus, so you can get him? You just have to register to be Republican for a short period of time, caucus, and then withdraw it. A lot of people do that, you know.
That is totally in the realm of if I did things, I would do that, because that sounds awesome. But
you'd be the only one probably in the whole state sitting there trying to caucus. And then you know what? They'd figure out that guy is not really Republican. He registered Republican,
dude,
so he could come here and caucus.
I would get a suit and a wig and just like do my impression.
He's not real.
Him.
Someone check his card, his voter card. We
tell everybody who's with a different candidate that they're fired. Like,
they'd know. They'd know you're only a temporary Republican.
Oh, God, that would be awesome.
People do that. People do register Democrat or Republican just
to
caucus, and then they withdraw.
Yeah.
That's the Iowa way.
I think I'm still independent, and I think I need to fix that, because I think fewer people will call me. It used to be the other way around.
I'm nothing.
But now,
it's blank. It's totally blank.
That's true for most stuff with you, though.
Yeah.
Also, like us on Facebook, because why not? What else have you got going on? I'll get you a taco truck.
No, he won't. Don't say things like that.
That's about it. Yeah, I think that's it. So we will talk to you in a week, people.
Yep.
All right.
See you
Remember,
in a week.
Send me money.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech Dot com.